So with that being said, I'd love to get into a code demo, and I'm going to jump into Visual Studio, and I want to start creating. I'll just cruise up here, and I'm just going to start creating some functions. And in fact, even before I do that, I think it's just fun to note that I'm inside right now the default.js file of this project, which in itself, the entire code file is inside of one of these immediate functions. So, you know, right off the bat, anytime we declare a function inside there, we're already declaring a function within a function. So I'll expand that back out. And so if I want to, I can go in here and just create a simple function. So, you know, function, maybe I'm just going to say it's add, like what we saw before, and, you know, n1, n2, and, you know, I'll make it return something simple, such as what you probably guessed, n1 plus n2. Great. Now, what's really interesting what you could do here is you could have another function, and you can maybe call this one calc, and you could supply to it maybe an n1, an n2, and maybe the process for the calc. And inside there, you can make the call. Maybe it'll return process for calc and pass in n1 and n2. Now, that's a pretty interesting line of code. And if you were a C# developer, you'd probably be thinking to yourself right now, boy, that looks a lot kind of like a delegate. And in a sense, that's what we're doing, is we're saying, hey, I want to be able to pass something in here that's going to be treated like a function or a method. So in another group of code, maybe a function called execute, math, you can simply do something like, hey, I would like to, you know, output to the, you know, set the output, which is a little internal function I created, and set the output to the result of calling calc, passing in 4, 4, and add. Now notice, does it seem wrong that I didn't add the arguments there into the parentheses for that add? You know, all I did was pass in the word add. I didn't pass in any of those arguments. And so, I don't know, does that feel wrong to you or look wrong to you?
It doesn't look usual. Usually when you're talking about a function, you can identify it by the parentheses afterwards. And when they're empty, I like to call that a football. When they're empty, that usually refers to the fact that you're calling an argument without any arguments at all. I'm calling a function without any arguments at all.
Sure. So I think the thing that's kind of fun to talk about here is when we're calling the function without any parentheses whatsoever, any at all, what we're really doing is passing that function in. Not really executing, but just passing it in. So the word add here, since that's the name of the function, think of this whole line right here, because keep in mind, we're passing add into the calc, and we're now saying that's the new name of add, process for calc, and that's where the numbers get passed in. So again, for people who've been doing certain types of languages, whether it's function pointers or delegates in C#, this is just a way for us to say, I want to pass the functionality in for those particular calls. So a little syntax there, hopefully to help the developer community out there see some of the, you know, the powerful features there of JavaScript. I'm going to collapse that whole line again just because I want to emphasize in many cases when you're going to be doing development with Windows 8, and especially when we start to see tomorrow, you know, the introduction of other pages that you're going to introduce. Right now we've kind of, even though Code Show has multiple pages, we kind of just kind of zoomed right in and went to the tile for it, but in your applications, you're going to have multiple pages that you're probably going to navigate to and from. each one of them will more than likely have their own JavaScript file, and they're typically going to be found in one of these immediate functions where you declare certain things to happen. And then, of course, later on, you'll see that functions have a very strong role as well in event handling. And so and when certain events happen, you can have that functionality called. So, very important to understand the significance of functions within JavaScript. So with all that said, that's one aspect. And then I noticed, I had to bite my tongue, so to speak, when you were talking about the cool feature there of showing the arguments, I noticed that arguments was actually kind of related to a certain type that we're going to be getting into here. So maybe since that was your demo, maybe you could chat about where I'm alluding to.
Well, just exactly what type are you talking about?
Well, it was a list of things, so I'll give you a hint.
Okay. I'll just go ahead and name it. We're going to be talking about the arrays. Arrays are really important. They've kind of always been important. It's a list of things. Of course, they've always been important, but it seems like when we're working on the client here, we're doing a lot of array work. We're doing lots of list work, and arrays have been a little bit abstract, a little bit difficult to work with in JavaScript in the past, and so it's made it a very manual process. And honestly, the way I usually worked with arrays is I usually just worked with a more powerful, more robust server-side function and passed down the elements that I wanted to render, but handled all of my lists of things on the server side. Well, arrays have really gotten an upgrade. They've really evolved in the latest version of ECMAScript, and so we're going to look at some of these new features of arrays. Arrays are no more than just a list of objects. That's it. Just a list of strings, a list of integers, a list of objects. Could even be a list of functions. So arrays are really powerful, and we're going to look at how to just simply declare and instantiate arrays. And then we're going to look at a whole bunch of array functions. These are functions that you can hang right off of an array and make it act a lot like link in C#. So if you've used link in C#, you're going to see a lot. As a matter of fact, for each of these functions, there's an equivalent in C#, and I'll draw those out so that if you are familiar with that language, then you'll be able to understand that. So I am working in just my sandbox app again. So this is not available on Code Show, but this is just some dynamic JavaScript that we're going to be writing. Now, I showed you before how I can make a variable, give it a name, and set it equal to a value, right? That's a value. That's a scalar value, we would say, because it's not multiple values, it's just one. But if I want to do multiple values, I simply use square braces. Square braces is the signature for an array, okay? I've just created an empty array, and I actually haven't told JavaScript how many things are going to end up being in that array, and it's okay with that. The performance might not be as good. In some cases, if you know exactly how many spots you want to reserve, it's better for you to tell it how many spots you want to reserve. But it's okay like this. So let's make this meaningful. Let's actually declare an array called fruit. And in our square braces, let's give it some actual fruit. So we'll do an apple, a comma, an orange, comma, and a banana. So there we've just declared an array and put three things in that array right out of the get-go, okay? Now, one of the cool things about arrays is that if I send, for instance, my fruit object to my log event, which is this little event down here that I made, it's able to take that fruit object and output it, because by default, it's going to call toString on that array, and the toString is going to turn an array, which is an actual list of things, into a string representation of that array with commas separating each of the values inside. So I'll go ahead and log out my fruit. We'll see what that looks like. Bada boom. We've got apple, orange, banana in what looks like a list with commas in between. It's actually just one big string that was converted from my actual array.
Cool.
Not rocket science. Very helpful. Very helpful to be able to working with these objects. Now, if I want to sort the fruit, so right now it's not in alphabetical order, is it?
True.
Apple, orange, banana, it's not alphabetical. I could call sort, just cool. Like that.
That's cool.
Let's try it. Now it's apple, banana, orange. So it's sorted it for us. That's helpful. And there's a lot of these functions. So I've got a big list on the slide here of at least most of the functions that are available to you. In the CodeShow project, you'll notice that there's a file in there called OchoJS, and a couple of array functions that I find particularly helpful I put into OchoJS, so you can grab those if you'd like to and reap the benefits. But we'll look at some of these. Let's go ahead and push a new value onto this array. So there's fruit. Before we actually show it in a sorted fashion, let's push another fruit. Can you tell me a fruit that begins with A?
Oh, thanks.
Or how about B, C, or D? Any early?
My mind just drew a blank, but I'm going to go with, a pear. Well, that's kind of up there, though, isn't that?
It's fine. It's fine. And we've already got an apple.
We got an apple.
The problem.
Our tech guys recommended something we already have.
Yeah. It's okay. We'll live. Let's try pear. I'm now pushing the pear value onto my array. Okay? And then I'm going to log that, and I'm going to use the sort command to do that. So again, we are in alphabetical order. Pears at the end of our list, but that's okay. Apple,
I
banana.
I ruined it for you.
We run into blanks. Apple, banana, orange, pear. And then there's pop. Now pop knows to take its value off the end of the stack and doesn't need a value. So I'm going to push a certain value, but then I'm going to pop whatever is on the end of the stack. If you're not familiar with push and pop, this is a stack data structure where it's kind of like the, you know, when you go to those all-you-can-eat buffets and they have a stack of plates, and you know that the plate on the bottom has not been used in 3 years, because by the time, before they get to the bottom, they always bring in some clean plates and put them on the top. So first in, first out. It's a data structure. That's what push and pop enables you to do.
Who knew?
Let's go ahead and run this. We put pear on, but we also took pear off. It's now gone.
Yep.
Push and pop. All right? Let's look at concat, and we're also going to look at slice and splice. So concat allows you to concatenate two arrays. We're going to need another array. I'm going to give you a chance to redeem yourself here.
Oh, great. I know I wanted to say tomato, but I think it's a fruit.
Grows on trees, so it's a fruit.
I
took the easy one.
Thanks. Let's see. Yeah. When it comes to fruits, oh, broccoli. If
there
you, know
you
how to spell
go.
It.
If I know how to spell it, still a fruit, even if I don't know how to spell it. I don't know how to spell that one.
Now I'm stumping you. I think that's pretty close.
There we go. That's cauliflower. That's how you spell cauliflower.
What is artichoke?
Artichoke is a vegetable.
Same, yeah.
Okay, so we've got two arrays, right? We've got fruits and we've got vegetables.
Yeah.
What do you suppose would happen if we took the fruit and we called concat and passed in the vegetables? It would take the vegetable. I'll just tell you. It'll take the vegetables array, concatenate it onto the fruit array, keep them in that order, and let's actually take the sort off here so we don't have to get messed up with the order, and run that. Whoa, and it didn't work.
Does concat return the result of that join?
Yes, it does, and thank you very much for, I was actually just testing you there. So this
I
is actually
that.
A good point, because yeah, and you passed.
Thanks.
This is a good point because interestingly enough, some of the array functions have been implemented as immutable, and others are implemented as immutable. So when we get to one of the mutable ones, I'll let you know exactly what I mean. This one is immutable, meaning it just returns its value, so we need to capture that and set it in order to use it. There we go. Concatenation. All right, let's look at slicing. Let's go ahead and slice the fruit array. Let's slice it like this. Let's slice 0, 1. Slicing 0, 1 and then outputting this will give us just apple. Okay? So it's giving us the slice that we took out of it. It's sliced out starting with an index of 0 and going a length of 1, or going to an index value of 1. It's taken all of the array values in between, which is just apple.
So when we're talking about that 0 represents, so this must be now a 0-based array.
Absolutely.
So go to the first one, which was at position 0, and take only 1.
Yeah, and it's actually not a length, it's the end. So we can specify an index of 2. For instance, we could specify an index of 1 to an index of 2, and this will still just get one value.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely. There it is. We've taken the second one. Gotcha. It's not the easiest way to take the second value, but you get the point. It takes a slice out of your array and returns it. But now we're going to look at splice. And if we just hook up splice like this, I'm going to splice, and let's get a little bit more in here. Few more fruits in there. I know they're berries, but berries are fruit, right?
Why not?
Sure. So we take a splice of this, and let's say we want to splice at position 1. So we'll start with 1. And we want to go a distance of how many? Let's take 2 out of it. And then we want to pass in, uh-oh, I'm going to need some more fruit.
Great.
How about a melon and a grape?
Well, that works.
Okay, so splice is saying start where, how many to delete, and then what do you want me to put in? This is taking advantage of our arbitrary number of arguments that can be passed into a function, because I could just keep passing things in here. Is all day long. Okay, let's see how that looks. It's not going to look like what you expect.
Okay.
Well, I'm not sure what you expect, but this is passing orange and banana. Those are the two pieces of fruit that I spliced, that I deleted from my array. So that's what's returned by this function. This splice is an example of a mutable function in JavaScript, meaning that when I just do this,
oh.
It changes fruit for good.
I see.
So you have to be aware of that. It's not immutable. It's not going to leave your array alone. It's going to affect it. So we're going to affect this fruit array by splicing at position 1, deleting 2 fruit, and putting 2 more in there.
Oh, okay. So the advantage of that approach is that if you had a different variable at the beginning, var something equals, you know, that fruit, you can find out what the difference was as well.
Exactly. You kind of get 2 things back from that function. You get the things that were deleted from it as a return value, and then you get the resulting array as the muted, the mutated
sure.
Array value. Absolutely. So let's take a look at what happens when we just let that change affect our array, and then we log it out. There it is.
Excellent.
We've replaced orange and banana with melon and grape. Now, let's get into some even cooler functions that affect arrays. I'm going to show you map. If you've used C#, you'll recognize map as being the same thing as select. Okay? Select in C# is equivalent to map in JavaScript. It's a projection. It gives you an opportunity to transform each of the items in your list in some way. So if I have a list of fruit, notice that this fruit has all been in lowercase. I could transform each of those items by turning them each to lower or to uppercase.
Cool.
That would be a projection, something new. So let's go to our fruit. Who cares about the vegetables right now? Let's take each of these values and export that as uppercase. So I will say fruit equals fruit map. Now, unlike the other functions, this one takes a function. We just learned about functions and that we can pass functions into functions, and that's exactly what we're doing here. This one's expecting us to give a little name. I like to use I for item. It's expecting us to give a little name to each item as it iterates over the whole list. So there's our big function. And in here, we get to specify what it is that we want to happen to each individual item, and we get to return it. So I'm going to return I to uppercase. And that's a function, so I'm calling it. I'm not passing it, I'm calling it. Okay? That means that fruit is no longer a list of lowercase fruit. It's now a list of uppercase fruit. Let's try this. And don't make me a liar, it worked.
That's fantastic. So whatever you return from that, whether you use that I argument or not, you could have just blown away everything in there and returned whatever you wanted to, and it may have had nothing to do with the item itself.
Absolutely. I could just return Fred here, and I've all of a sudden turned all of my fruit into the word Fred. One thing that's very common, let's say that this is not an array of silly fruit strings, but it is rather a list of movies from Netflix.
Cool.
So you've got movies that look a certain way. All your properties have certain names. It looks like the way Netflix defined a movie, but you want to define it a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to project this. You want to return a new type We're going to get into objects soon, but this is a little bit of a prelude.
Sure.
You want to return a new type. Now, this is no longer a list of mere fruit. This is now a list of objects which contain a property called fruit name that is the fruit name.
Perfect.
Okay? So we can return something completely new like that. And let's see how that looks. Now we're returning objects.
Yes. I'm interested in learning more about objects.
Good. Well, you just wait. So the map function is a projection, basically projecting whatever item is in our array into something completely new. Keep in mind, however, it doesn't have to be just a slight modification of the item. It can be a complete modification of the item. It can even be the result of a web call, like, for instance, XML HTTP request based on your item. So that's a really popular way to use it as well. I'm also going to show you how to filter. So filter is another one of these array functions, and filtering is somehow modifying or reducing the list of items that are in your array. It also is expecting a function that in this case is acting like a lambda function, if you're familiar with lambda functions. And we also, in this case, we don't want to return a value which will become the new item. In this case, we want to return a Boolean, which, if true, will determine that this item qualifies to stay in the list, or if false, indicates that it should be removed from the list. So just returning true, actually I would have to do return true. Just returning true would not affect the list at all. Everything would pass. Returning false would mean that everything failed and our list would have been stripped down to nothing. So I want to test our items in some way. I want to see if our item's first character, and I can access the first character of a string with this, if our item's first character is equal to A. Now, I know you C-sharp people, your brains just exploded when you saw three equal signs in a row, and you're texting in the chat window right now that I made a mistake. If you aren't familiar with this syntax in JavaScript, this is a way of differentiating between the equals with coercion and the equals without coercion. Okay, so triple equals are important to understand the difference between that and double equals, all right? So I'm going to say this item can stay in the list if it equals A. Let's try it. And all we get is apple. It's the only item that was returned because it's the only one that begins with A. So that's the filter function. We also have sum and every. We're going to look at sum, every, and for each. Okay, those are the last three that we're going to look at. Sum is exciting. I like that one. So filter gives us a new list that is filtered down in some way based on our criteria. But if I say that I want to, for instance, return fruit every, and then for the function that I pass into every, I'm asking if every one of these items begins with A. There we go. So if every one of these items begins with A, then this should return true. And in fact, it's false, because not every one of these items begins with A. Now, I could say, does every one of these items, not begins with A, but does every one of these items have a length that is greater than 0? If every one of them has a length that is greater than 0, then I'll get a true. And then sum, the every is equivalent to the all in C#. And then if you're familiar with the any in C#, you're going to recognize the functionality behind sum. Sum will tell me if some of these are greater than 0. And in fact, they all are, so it better be true that some are. But if we go back to our previous function and ask if the first character is equal to A, what am I going to get, Michael?
I'm thinking,
do any of my fruit begin with A?
Yes.
At least some of my fruit begin with A. And so it's true.
Awesome.
And one more function for arrays, and that is for each. So as opposed to logging this, I will say fruit.forEach also expects a function, also expects us to give a parameter that represents each item in the array. And when you do a for each, you basically iterate over every item in that group. Some of the other, all the other ones iterate over the item in the group, but this is an explicit way to say for each of the fruit, I want to do something. This may or may not return an array, affect the array. It could do absolutely anything you want.
Right.
It's just a way of iterating over it.
So if you really wanted to affect the array, that's when you might want to use map.
Absolutely.
But if you just need to iterate through them and do your own custom stuff and you don't want to mess around, this is a great option.
Yep, absolutely. So those are arrays. And then there's one more concept that I want to show you, and that is the concept of objects. So we've looked at variables. We looked at JavaScript, the language overall. We've looked at variables and functions and function scope and arrays and finally objects. Now, there's not actually too much to be said about objects because it's such a broad topic that we'll see most of it in context. But what I'm going to show you is how to instantiate an object in a really light fashion. And I'm going to tell you the difference between what's called object initializer syntax and JSON. Hopefully you've heard of JSON. If not, JSON is a great JavaScript-related object notation. So an object, remember that an array, let's just call it A, my array equals, I use square braces, right? But if I'm making an object, I use curly braces. That's really important to remember that because that's the foundation for JSON object notation and object initializer syntax. Now, anytime I use the curly braces, I've got myself an object. But remember that in JavaScript, this is a dynamic language. So with that object, I could go ahead and add properties onto it. Let's call our object a dog. And let's say that I want to add the breed, which breed this dog is, afterwards. And let's go ahead and initialize it to a German Shepherd.
That's crazy.
Absolutely. We're just dynamically throwing a property on there, something you can't do in strong typed languages.
That's right.
Actually, I could also throw a function on there, like bark. And I suppose we might say something like log woof to implement bark. Just thinking on the fly here.
Sure.
So we're dynamically adding these properties, including functions as properties, to our dog object. But these could be specified in the object initializer syntax. So we could just give ourselves some room, and here we could say, I want a breed that is German Shepherd, comma, not semicolon, but comma, and I also want bark. And bark is a function.
So you're using comma to separate the members of this object?
Absolutely. Whereas if you're doing it on their own line, of course, those are different statements, so those are semicolons. So this is what we call object initializer syntax. Note a couple of things. First of all, these values do not have quotes around them, although it works if you do. That works, but they're not required. The other thing to notice is that we declared a function here. Now, JSON syntax is just a little bit different. JSON syntax actually demands that we put quotes around here. And in JSON syntax, functions are not allowed. It can only hold static data. No functionality in JSON syntax. So when you call a web service and you get some data back, there's a really good chance that you'll get data that looks like this right here. And that is JSON syntax.
Cool.
All right?
I like it.
So we've looked at a number of the core capabilities of JavaScript. I hope that makes sense to you. I hope it's kind of an introduction to the language, and I hope, like me, you come to enjoy developing in JavaScript and look a lot more into it. So you're going to find lots of resources online, find a good book, and dig into the complexities of JavaScript because it really is a good time. And with that, we're going to go ahead and lead into a break. Really thank you for attending this session. I hope to see you again in the next one in 10 minutes.